I appreciate your interest in the issues that we will be here to discuss, and I want to also let you know that we do have an industry partner with us on this podium, so they will also be giving some input for this, and I appreciate your involvement in this meeting. So my name is Paul Penner. I'm now past president of the National Association of Wheat Growers, and I just ended my term here just maybe, an hour ago or so, and it's been a great run to be able to serve the grassroots farmers in wheat farmers in North America in the United States. And so with that, I want to go ahead and just give you some issues that I have to discuss, and we will follow down the table to give their issues, and then afterwards we will entertain questions, whatever you have that you want to ask. We've had a lot of success with regards to lobbying efforts, and one thing, even though sometimes you feel like it was like birthing an animal, the Farm Bill was quite an event. It took a lot of effort by a lot of commodity associations and farmers across America to do that. But having said that, we're glad that it is now in the implementation phase, and we want to move forward with that and make sure there's a smooth transition so farmers can get their yields updated, their acres updated, and also enrolled into the program. One thing that's really important for us right now at this juncture is we're also supporting legislation that will require the Federal Grain Inspection Program, which is reauthorized on a periodic basis, to take whatever actions are necessary to immediately restore official grain inspection and weighing service whenever and wherever it is disrupted. If you remember, the PNW, there was an event that really caused some financial harm, and as the labor union was striking, and they were having a disruption of the grain inspections, and so the ships could not be loaded and the train cars could not move through the ports, and also it was backing up to the elevators in the Northwest and all the way through North Dakota. So we want to make sure that the USDA, the Federal Grain Inspection Programs, would be mandated that they use whatever means necessary to get the inspectors in there and to prevent further disruption in the future. So, it's mandated under U.S. Grain Standards Act that this be taken care of. And I know we put quite a bit of pressure on the appropriate agencies at the time during that last disruption. And we were the good thing is we had working relationships with a number of the officials behind the scenes to be able to at least give them our concerns. One other thing that I would like to recognize is that with regards to Farm Bill implementation, also RMA, acres reporting, we believe that there should be a way to recognize the different risks associated with different cropping practices and allow producers to tailor the tools available to their respective risks. Just consider irrigated and dry land crops are different, their yields are different, and their dynamics are different. And so we would also like that to be able to be reflected on the insurance products. And right now, the yields are commingled on a farm unit, and so that means that the farmers cannot take advantage like they should be able to, if there's irrigated production versus dry land. So that's what we would like to push through in any upcoming negotiations if there is some legislation to be brought forward. We're also, like I said earlier, we're working through the Farm Bill implementation. We had some good discussions with FSA people today and yesterday, and Deputy Secretary Krista Hardin also met with NOG during the our board meetings, and there was some productive discussions there. They've recognized that there are some hitches sometimes where the maybe the rulings that have been written are just not quite explicit as they should be, and I think we even stumped one of the people that was at this meeting with a question. They said, you know, we'll have to get back to you, and we'll have to see if what we need to do to make the changes. So that was a really productive meeting, even here in Phoenix. You know, instead of on the Hill, we got that communication made. So we appreciate and we thank the USDA for actually bringing people out from the Farm Service Agency to speak to us. With that, I will turn this over to our current new president, Brett Blankenship from Washington State.
Thank you, Paul. Delighted to be here. You know, it's really a different experience for me because I've spent the past several years supporting Paul as president, and now people suddenly are concerned about what I think, and it's a new experience. So one of the things we're looking at for the National Wheat Growers right now is very important, is an opportunity to advance trade. How often do you have anything with the potential to move through the current Congress? Not very often. But we have a current opportunity of the president mentioning trade promotion authority in his State of the Union address. And the Republicans in control of Congress that normally are in favor of trade promotion authority. And I think there's a unique opportunity to advance that forward. And why would we be concerned about that? 50% of the wheat crop in America is exported. So any trade opportunity we can seize upon, we want to seize upon with full force. So trade promotion authority is a consistent position in National Wheat Growers. We support trade authority regardless of who resides at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, and we always have been. So with trade promotion authority, we think it would also be a unique opportunity to finish up the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And why is that key for wheat? Well, Paul mentioned I farm in the Pacific Northwest, Washington State. The PNW states are trade dependent, not only the whole state economy, but as far as wheat, the percentage of wheat exported out of the PNW is closer to 90% of production, not 50. So the Pacific Rim countries and those markets are vital to PNW wheat farmers, and a unique opportunity to advance both of those issues doesn't come along very often. So we really want to see that move within this year, I think, is key to make that happen. As far as other trade issues, of course, the president's effort to open up trade or normalize relations to Cuba, we view that very favorably. It may not be a huge number of bushels for wheat, per se, but it's some, and it's very close to our shores. And we think the southern states that produce wheat would view that opportunity very favorably. And not only that, many wheat growers also grow other crops that the Cubans could import, and that just helps our growers on any number of levels. So we're very enthusiastic about that opportunity. As far as other issues on the Hill, as we head into budgeting and appropriations, since we are very trade dependent, the trade promotion funding in Congress, like the Market Access Program and Foreign Market Development, is key to promoting wheat and establishing markets overseas. We want to see that funding maintained, as well as on the risk management side, there tends to be almost an annual attack on appropriating funds to maintain the crop insurance program. Crop insurance is very key to wheat growers. Wheat is grown in marginal areas. Wheat is grown in high-risk areas. And so crop insurance becomes vital to the safety net. And with the new Farm Bill, that is essentially the only safety net program we have. So keeping a strong, vigorous, robust crop insurance program is vital to our growers, and we will devote most of our efforts to that. On a personal note, you know, crop insurance has been important. I very rarely collect on crop insurance, but when I do, it's the one thing that keeps me in business. And I would not be in business today were it not for the federal crop insurance program. So I have a personal affection for the aspects of that safety net program. With that, I'll hand the microphone on down to my friend Dusty Tallman.
Good afternoon. My name's Dusty Tallman. I live and farm in southeast Colorado, which is a high-risk marginal area, evidently, because we've used crop insurance a whole bunch about the last 3 or 4 years. It's been tough in our country. That's where my name Dusty came from. I was born in the dirt storms in the 50s. The street lights were on in downtown Lamar, Colorado, and my aunt nicknamed me Dusty, so it's stuck ever since. I'm the chairman of the National Wheat Foundation. The National Wheat Foundation is an organization set up basically through NOG we do several things. Mostly what we do is try to promote education and leadership in the wheat industry. We also own the building that NOG is housed in Washington, D.C. It was purchased by wheat farmers in somewhere around 70, 71, and have owned the building ever since. So if you get to D.C., want to see a good ag building, we've owned it all the whole time. So it's a big asset to our industry. But why I'm here today is I have the pleasure to announce two different programs that we work with BASF on. The first one is the Minori Scholarship. Jerry Minori was an employee with BASF that worked closely with the wheat industry for a lot of years, and after his death, BASF decided that it would be a good program to have to promote a scholarship program. And so just earlier today, and I was in meetings, didn't get to be there, but earlier today they awarded the scholarships to 4 young people, 2 young men, 2 young women, I think here in the convention hall. So we're pleased to do that and have enjoyed it for 3 years now. We are also eager to announce the development of a new program with BASF as our partner. We're going to put together a wheat yield contest. We know some of the other crops have yield contests. Wheat has a few in various states, but not very many of them. And so what we would like to do is put together a national wheat yield contest. The goal of the contest like that is to increase U.S. wheat grower productivity and to ensure an ample supply of U.S. wheat to all of our millers and bakers and everybody else that consumes wheat in the United States. Some of the objectives of the wheat yield contest are to drive innovation, enable knowledge transfer between growers, urge experimentation with new technologies, and to identify top wheat producers in each state. Yield contests will participate by class. For those of you that don't know, there's 6 separate classes of wheat. So we'll try to develop this thing to where we have a wheat yield contest winner for each class and then maybe a national winner. It's going to be a little difficult to put all the details together. But by state and by region, we'll have some localized winners, and we'll also have dry land and irrigated winners. The contest rules, we're still in the process of developing them. And we'll get them announced well prior to the contest as it starts. Our national sponsor is BASF, and we're looking for some other sponsors from some of the other industry. And it's a great pleasure today that I turn the mic over to Neil Bentley, who is the director of marketing for BASF, and announcing a new partnership with wheat.
Thanks, Dusty. It is really a pleasure to be here today, and we thank you especially for the partnership that we have together with NOG and the National Wheat Foundation, and especially as it comes to the future of our young people in agriculture. With the Jerry Minori Memorial Scholarship, it was a fantastic opportunity today to provide those 4 young students with a great opportunity to continue to become leaders and advocates in our industry. But we also believe, based on building that advocacy, that we're also building a strong future for wheat growers in the U.S. We really believe in that bright future, and we see a fantastic opportunity moving forward. We're really pleased to be the primary sponsor of the National Wheat Yield Contest to really help growers improve not only their wheat productivity, but also their wheat revenue opportunities. We think it's initiatives like this for wheat growers across the U.S. that really helps growers, you know, work with innovations that not only can help them break through yield boundaries and barriers, but also help them grow and learn from one another. And we especially thank the National Wheat Foundation, the National Association of Wheat Growers for their vision and partnership in working together with us on behalf of wheat growers and agriculture in general. So thank you very much for the opportunity.
Okay, at this time, I will entertain any questions that you would have for any of the panelists.
So when are you going to kick off the contest?
We're still developing rules. Well, our plan was to try to get it in place, and the other complication with wheat is you got spring wheat, you got fall wheat. We were trying to get it in place for kicking it off this fall. For growers across the country, it's going to depend on how quickly we can get all the rules put together. So I would say if not this fall, next spring. One of the reasons, and I forgot to say this earlier, and I don't know the exact statistic, but they say that somewhere in the ballpark of when you have a wheat yield contest, within 10 years, the winner of that wheat field contest, the national yield is about that high. So what it does is it drives innovation in among the growers because they find out what somebody else is doing. So we think it's a great program.
So the models that, like others, you said other states do this already? There are some states that have state yield contests?
Yeah, I think Kansas is one, and I think, if I remember right, Kentucky was the other one. I think there's two of them. And we've also been in a considerable amount of conversation with corn growers to try and model it somewhat after what they do, and they've been very helpful in that in those discussions. So hopefully that's the direction we go, and we don't have to rebuild the entire system, but we get this started.
But the difference is between spring and winter wheat, you think it's going to be you can't obviously compare the two.
No.
You're going to have different categories like you do with corn growers.
Yeah, you're going to have different categories, different classes, dry land, irrigated. It's not going to be real simple, but our thought process is there would be one national wheat champion, whatever the title ends up being, and that would be across classes and across both irrigated, dry land, whatever. And we may have to have a dry land and an irrigated. Like I say, these are all the things we have to flush out yet.
If I could add just one point to that issue. One of the threats, long-term threats to the wheat industry is loss of acres and loss of competitive advantage. And so we're looking for any tool possible to drive up our competitiveness on a similar level to corn and soybeans and the other crops that are not encroaching might be the wrong word, but let's face it, we've lost a lot of acres to these other commodities. And the growers are doing fine because what does the grower care as long as he's profitable, whether he's a, quote, wheat grower or a, quote, corn grower. But we're hoping a method like this or a tool like this might help get a competitive advantage back to wheat enough to certainly reverse the trend or stop the trend, but we hopefully reverse it and come back to where those growers have choices, and that'll help all three commodities.
Yes, ma'am.
Will it solely be based on yield, or will there be a component of economic viability of the crop and management and something along those lines, which other commodities are mumbled about?
Neil, would you like to answer that one?
No,
We actually had a meeting in January in D.C., and what we did is we brought quite a few of the producers there. We brought industry in, and that was exactly what our discussion at that point was, whether or not quality needed to enter into this discussion, whether or not marketability. You know, we were talking yesterday in some of the domestic policy meetings about falling numbers. We can't get it too technical, but, yeah, we would like to make it – We're talking profitability, and if there's a profitability factor because of quality, then I think that's a great thing we can add into it. So it's probably going to start being yield because that's the easiest thing to measure, and then we'll go from there. Ask these guys questions.
You're doing great.
Brett, you mentioned being competitive with other crops, and certainly those crops have biotechnology. And we haven't heard anything from you guys here about biotechnology. Where does NOG stand on that right now?
The growers are open to all the tools to advance and increase in yield to be competitive per acre with the other crops. So even if a company had a biotech product or a biotech event ready, it would still take some 5 to 10 years to gain regulatory approval. So that may not be something that shows up necessarily in time to reverse this trend. So we're looking to the tech providers and our land-grant universities to use all the tools available to us. And then should they have a biotech event, seek the public adoption of it and public acceptance of it. That's probably the better way to articulate that.
If I were to follow up on that question, is there is with the wheat industry, you know, it's a little bit different than the like corn and soybean industry, where biotech has been a part of that natural environment for quite some time. It's important that not only do we have farmer acceptance or desire of biotechnology, we also need to have the customer acceptance on the other end. And to that end, you know, there's a need to develop the markets or bring the markets to that point of acceptance. And so we have to have dialogue with them. We have to have dialogue with the millers. We have to have dialogue with the bakers. And when you talk with some of these the stakeholders, not necessarily the consumers at this point, the stakeholders are seeing the decline in acres. And it's becoming an alarming trend for them because they're concerned about where they're going to source their needs, their raw material needs in the future. And it's been amazing that in the last 7-8 years that we've been talking biotech for wheat, that we've seen a change in attitude there. Now, if you go to countries that have experienced starvation, there's no debate. They want food. And so that's quite an important aspect. Now, you know, we're talking about our customers like South Korea, Japan, and the EU. You know, it's a different ball game, and so getting customer acceptance there is necessary. One of the things that Brett alluded also is the low level presence. You know, as we move towards the introduction of biotechnology, that it is important that in our grain shipments, whether it be non-GMO corn or non-GMO Milo, that there be a low-level presence standard that buyers are comfortable with. Say, for instance, if there's grain dust in there, that has, you know, it's impossible to completely sanitize a vessel. But to get that level, that presence down to the point, say, like 5% or below, where they would be acceptable for them. You know, grain dust is difficult to extract. So there's a lot of different pieces of the puzzle before we even get to the point of introduction of biotech and wheat. I know the farmers are anxious. We've had a survey where farmers have said, yes, they want biotech in wheat. And so we're moving in that direction, but it takes a more concerted effort by all the industry stakeholders to get to that point.
Got one over here.
Paul, yes.
I think last year in San Antonio, you and I talked about the group you were getting out some good information about the celiac situation and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Has there been any more work done in that regard?
Well, you're talking about in terms of research or in terms of just discussion with consumers?
With people. Yeah.
Okay. Yes. There is a more concerted effort to message especially in social media and also with dietitians and other groups that are really concerned about nutrition. Wheat Foods Council is moving in that direction more than they were in the past, and that's a positive sign. One thing that I even noticed as we were coming here, my wife shows me, she saw a magazine that was on the rack, and she actually bought it and read the article. It's a Self magazine. Of course, I don't read Self. You know, I don't know how many of you do as well, but in there was an article that written by an author that was very knowledgeable about the issues of gluten, and she presented it in a very readable fashion. I don't know what percentage of the consumers read that magazine or that publication, but looking at it, there was some good discussion about the science behind the issue, you know, about the hype, and also is about the science. I know some. It's the difficulty with consumers is accepting science, you know, because what they see on social media, you know, 30% of the consumers now have altered their diets because of what they hear and what they read. So it's an ongoing discussion, and we need to engage them even more than we have, because I feel that. When it becomes more than a trend, I mean more than a fad, that's where we need to engage and make sure we have good information and people that will blog with a passion and get the message across.
Just briefly, we had a wheat summit in November in St. Louis and invited. This is a foundation with the Wheat Innovation Alliance. It was a combination. Wheat Innovation Alliance is one of the committees or the organizations under the foundation. Had the bakers, the millers, producers, about every person in the wheat chain. They're all starting to realize that when you're losing 15 to 20 to 25% of market share because of whether it's gluten or wheat belly or grain brain, It's a serious event, and so I think we're all starting to come to the conclusion that we have to spend some time and some money combating that. And part of the problem is it takes a lot of money to combat that. So that's something else we're working toward, but that's a ways off yet.
On a humorous note, we have a saying in the industry. You know, wheat is the staff of life. And it's very cultural. We break bread. Even the disciples broke bread with the Lord, and it wasn't cornbread.
One more? I think I had one over here.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you. You mentioned FMD and MAP funds and the importance of those for the wheat industry and their exports. So my question is, will you see a reduction in the FMD and MAP funds due to sequestration this year? And if so, how do you make up for it?
That's a question better answered by our export arm. But the trend has been flat to lower, so we have to work very hard to keep the market enhancement funds level. If sequestration takes a chunk, There may be a dues increase to help offset that, to keep the export programs fully funded internally. But the return on investment to the public is huge with those programs, and we're talking such a small amount of dollars in relation to the federal budget. It seems strange that those come under attack at all with the kind of economic development and the return on investment we get from that. But that's a significant portion of the funding of the export program, not just for wheat, but the other commodities as well. But very important to wheat.
Good. She's saying we're done.
Thank you very much. We appreciate the questions.